Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is actually one of my earliest guests. So when I started doing my podcast, I was reaching out to people that I thought I could bring to the show and talk about all things Amazon. I had no idea what I was doing. And we met at the time I said, "Do you want to be on my podcast? We'll talk all about Amazon." She said, "Sure, why not?" So she was one of my early guests and showed up, and it was a great discussion. So I thought it's well overdue to bring her back, and let's get into Amazon real deep and catch up with each other, catch up with, most important, what's going on with Amazon. She's always on the cutting edge, and her original purpose was to help other sellers when she started her agency. And then somewhere along the journey, she discovered that she's actually a data person, and she loves spreadsheets and getting into all deep dives. And so today she's the co-founder of Jungler, which is a full service Amazon agency. And I asked her, "What do you like to do when you're not working?" And she says, "Well," and she was like thinking very relaxed and said, "Well, I like to relax, nothing too much pressure and long walks." And so I can understand working with data. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Elizabeth Green. Welcome back to the show, Elizabeth.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, you know, I know that you've been in this space a long time, but you are always engaged because we post regularly, obviously, for the podcast and other articles and things like that, and our mailing. And I always see you looking at stuff. You know, you don't miss a beat. So you're very engaged. So this is going to be a great conversation today, because we're going to get into something that is underutilized. Mm-hmm. It's one of the new tools that Amazon introduced. So for my listeners, if I want to set up this conversation, get your pen and paper or recording or whatever the way you do to record key moments, because anything that we're going to talk about is a new tool that presents a lot of opportunities, and you can take it straight to work and then apply it and then see the benefits of it. So what we're going to talk about is the Product Opportunity Explorer. We're going to talk about where to find it, what to look at, and most important, how to use it. So with that, let's dive right in, Elizabeth. So tell us, first of all, where is Product Opportunity Explorer? And give us a little bit of a perspective of what this is about and why people should pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. So where you're going to find it is if you go inside of Seller Central, if you go pop open your menu, you go to growth. And then inside of growth, in that, you know, kind of sub menu, you should see Product Opportunity Explorer. And if you have not checked this out, you absolutely should today. Why this is so exciting is this is a sort of a continuation of Amazon's trajectory. In 2023 was a lot of releases of data, and I completely understand it is hard to keep up with things. The one huge one that everyone freaked out about when it got released was Search Query Performance Report, which I am right with you. That tool is phenomenal. And this is sort of maybe a less talked about tool, but in my personal opinion, I think it's just as exciting. And the reason why is twofold. One, it gives us first party data. So first party data means that this is directly from the source of Amazon. Now, don't get me wrong, we still use a lot of keyword research tools, and it should be an addition to things that you're already using. It most likely is not going to replace anything. But the thing that makes this tool so exciting is it is another way to get insights into how a particular category, or when we dig into like the data and the definitions and how things are aggregated, Amazon in this tool calls them a niche, is how they categorize it. And it gives you insights into consumer behavior and competitor data around a specific niche within some ways you can think of as a category. I think only just 2 years ago, again, there was a lot of other tools like Helium 10 or Jungle Scout or BioLauncher, other tools out there that would help you sort of get an understanding of how a competitor was doing, right? People use Keepa charts, so you're tracking your competitors, buy box or sale prices or whatever. But it was really hard to get a full grasp on one, okay, so what are the trends happening in my space? How am I doing? How am I benchmarking against, everybody else that I'm competing across? And what are the trends that the consumers, like, how are they behaving in my specific category? And having all of that condensed into one place, it's really difficult to get. Even in some other tools that have like insane, kind of marketplace analysis dashboards, really digging in and honing in on those two things, market behaviors and competitor behaviors, which, let's be honest, those two things massively affect how our sales perform. And those are kind of like the missing pieces in a lot of ways, as to like understanding your own sales trends. And you can now access this for free inside your Amazon account. And it's quite user-friendly, I found.
I mean, exactly. So search query performance, I've been spending a lot of time on it. And as you know, a lot of the data on Amazon, when it's reported through, whether it's business reports or advertising reports or anything like that, it is what they call restated. In other words, if you look at today's performance tomorrow, so you pull your report and say, okay, what was it yesterday? What was it? You're looking at today, next week, or next month. So you're looking at that exact same date over time, because when you pull the reports, you're pulling always for a time frame. Data is always changing. In other words, if today you look at yesterday's performance and it shows five sales, you look at yesterday's performance next week, it may show 10 sales. Then week after, it may show 15 sales because of the attribution. In addition, there are things like shopper behavior. They put things in their cart and never check out. Amazon tracks that up to 90 days. So a sale, a click registers to your product detail page, but the sale does not and may not for up to 90 days. So somewhere around, I don't know, day 45 or whatever, people decide, oh, I was going to buy this, and then they check out. Now it's a sale that's registered to the day. So the data is always being restated. The reason why I bring this up is because search query performance data, I am told, don't quote me on it, it's a former Amazonian told me this. Search query performance data is not restated. In other words, once they close the week, because you get it weekly or monthly, that's it. And then even if more activity registers to those time periods, you're not going to see it in the data, even if you go back and download the same week again and again and again. I am told that search query performance is still in its infancy. It's not to be relied on 100%. Now, the reason why I go on and on about this is because I want to provide the distinction between Search Query Performance and the Product Opportunity Explorer. Search Query Performance is all about your performance, how your listings, your brand is performing with keywords, which keywords are getting clicks, add to cart, and purchase, and whatever. It's all about what you do. And then when you drill down at ASIN level, you can also see your competition on those compared to you. So it's all about you, which kind of reminds me of the movie Forrest Gump. Because if you remember in the movie, he starts running, right? And he runs forever. And people start following him. And one day he stops and he says, "I think I'm going to go home now." And everybody else following him is like, "Okay, what do we do now? You stop running, but what about us?" So you can fall into this kind of following your competition in a false way where you can be doing a good job, doing better than what they are doing. But if you miss what the market is doing, then you're going to lose the race, right? And that's where the Product Opportunity Explorer comes in, because it does not show you what you are doing or what the competition is doing. It shows you what the consumers are doing in a particular category in terms of demand, in terms of what they are saying about the products they find in those categories. So it really is an opportunity explorer for you to hone in and see what it is that we can see in terms of what the customer wants and what are their main pain points by looking at their evaluation of different products, right? So is that kind of a bit of a long description of the difference between Search Query Performance and Product Opportunity Explorer and why it's important? And what do you think?
I would say yes. I think the primary difference, to your point, of search query performance being very specific to your brand's performance, as well as to a very specific ASIN. So you're getting very deep into the data. And I think there's two distinct things that make Product Opportunity Explorer a little bit more zoomed out. Now, you still can get granular on a search term level, which I think we'll probably dive into here. But the thing with search query performance is you go in and you can either look at a overall brand level, so for your entire brand, or you can zoom in to an individual child ASIN. But those are your two points of diving in, which, if you're a larger brand, brand view is probably way too zoomed out. You want to be able to look at a specific product. However, the way the data is presented and how granular it is on a search term level, which you can benchmark against your competition. It will say, like, what is your click share? What is your impression share of a particular search term, which is very helpful. But because you're zoomed into an individual ASIN level, and for context, we manage a lot of brands that have very large variation listings. So, for, like, when I say brands, I'm talking about clothing brands, which, as you can imagine, if there's 100 different child ASINs on your particular listing, like, zooming into an individual child ASIN level is, to be frank, not very helpful when it comes to the data. And also, you do have the ability, to your point, to look at different timelines. For example, if I wanted to look at this week versus last week, or I wanted to say this month versus last month, you do have the ability to pull out those insights to see, okay, is my share of these impressions growing? Is my click share growing? What does my data look like? Or, you could go and pull the data for each individual child ASIN and then roll that up and then also look at over time. My main point, pain point with Product Opportunity Explorer has always been how much manipulation and sort of massaging of the data I have to do to be able to pull out the insights that I would like to get from it. So don't get me wrong, the data inside of search query performance reports is insanely powerful because of how granular you can get with it. But that's also precisely why it's maybe not as user-friendly as we would like it to be, is because it's so granular and also segmented. Now, the thing with Product Opportunity Explorer, and for context, this tool was actually released by Amazon to allow sellers to do product research. They wanted them to have insights into the consumer trends. See, because Amazon's entire goal is to provide the best selection of products at the most convenient price for shoppers. So their release of this is saying, hey, this is where we see consumer trends happening. This is where we see people searching. These are the things that they want to see in the products. And also, with this, they're providing insights on your competitors because they want to help you find where the market is underserved, which is phenomenal for sellers because we also are trying to understand what do consumers want and where is the market underserved so we can provide that to the sellers or to the shoppers, excuse me, because that's where we get better conversion rates and we get better sales volume when we kind of go after those things. So you definitely can use this for product research, but the other thing that you can do is use it to research the niches of your current products. And that's where kind of we've really started utilizing it because we're not into the product research game. We're into the ad management game. So for us, like you can literally go into Product Opportunity Explorer. You can search by a keyword or you can search by an ASIN. So you can go in today, you can enter in your ASIN here, and then you can sort of get an overview of one. It will give you all of the ASINs that Amazon says are in your niche or the different niches that they see your product in. And forgive me, it's been a hot minute since I dug into the sort of the metric glossary of this, but from my understanding, the way Amazon categorizes niches is very unique here and also provides an insane like deep understanding of the consumer behavior. So niches are actually different than categories. With a category, Amazon says like, okay, this is how we're going to categorize and subcategorize and make sense of this because we're looking at, you know, kind of groupings of attributes. The way niches are defined is Amazon actually looks at clusters of shopper searches and uses those clusters of shopper searches to define the niche. So they're not looking at just the products and the attributes. They're actually looking at consumer behavior and sort of shifting what they understand, you know, groupings of search terms or grouping of products to be, again, based around it's defined by the consumer behavior. And this is why it's so important because you can go in here and say, okay, what niches apply to my product? And then I can look at that grouping of consumer behavior and I can look at things like trends. And that's why I was saying search query performance is a little bit difficult to use because really pulling out that trend data is quite difficult. Here, Amazon actually allows you to click on a tab that says trends and you can view consumer behavior over time in your niche. So you can say, okay, this is my grouping of consumer behavior that I want to analyze because it applies to my product. And this is the piece of the market that I want to, you know, grow my brand in. What are the trends in terms of search volume? Again, first party data search volume for this entire grouping, which can be very insightful because oftentimes, say off season, we're looking at our sales decreases and freaking out and saying, okay, I need to push harder, but maybe my performance metrics or my profitability isn't where I want it to be. You can go and spot check here in the Product Opportunity Explorer and say, okay, this is my niche. Let's go to the trends tab. What is the search volume? What is the purchase behavior over time of this particular niche? Oh, purchase behavior of consumers is actually down. It's probably a market trend. And that insight can be achieved within minutes versus having to go through, you know, search query performance and try and pull out all the data and aggregate it. So I find it very insightful as well as highly user-friendly, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just said something that's really, to me, it's gold, because in Amazon world, there are often things that happen and you are always caught with your pants down, so to speak. It's you don't know, right? You don't know. It happens. These things never happen when you expect them. You are always kind of prepared, but you don't know what's going to hit you. So it's either something that they did, or something happened, or your competition did something to you, or your competition did something in general, or so you never know. So if you want to know what's going on, is the Product Opportunity Explorer is a place to start, at least. So that's one. The second thing is, just to give a little bit of a recap on what you said, Product Opportunity Explorer works with niches. You know, what is the customer searching for? So that means that they grouped a bunch of, if you like, keywords, categories, or whatever that is driving traffic to products. And then they put them under the umbrella of a niche. This is what they define as a niche. So what I heard you say is the first thing you have to do is find out what niche you are in as far as Amazon is concerned. So that's one. If you haven't done it already, go to Product Opportunity Explorer under Growth and plug in your ASIN and find out where Amazon sees you. Once you do that, you talked about another important thing. So there's something called, as you know, in data world, called time series calculations. In other words, if you download the data for last month, okay, you're looking at last month. If you downloaded the month before, that's the month before. But how do they compare between the two? But what about every month, month over month? So you really, you know, my favorite example is when you're driving from A to B and you're going to drive 100 miles, if you want to know your average speed, you calculate how long it took you to get there, and then you divide it by, you know, the miles. So that's your average speed. But you may have gone at 100 miles an hour at some point, or slow down to 25 miles. So you're looking at your dashboard and looking at your speed at the time. That doesn't tell you know, your traveling speed. Your traveling speed is over time. It's the same thing with your Amazon performance. Everything that you are doing, your sales, your ACoS, your TACoS, your, you know, everything, your cost per click, your average order value, these are all things that need to be looked at over time. And that becomes hard because now you have to collect the data and calculate, blah, blah. Your point was Product Opportunity Explorer does that already, right? So when you go into the niche, you can see trends, and then it tells you if it's getting better or worse or whatever. So therefore, when something happens, your sales drop, this is your first stop. Is it the market? Because if it's the market, now that's a different approach. And go look at your niche and look at the trend, and you can see immediately this is what's happening with the shopper behavior, which kind of brings us back to that Forrest Gump thing. So if you keep following the competition, but the market is going in a different way, then obviously you're going to get affected. So this is extremely valuable. So, okay, what else? Walk us through. So this is one way to spot check where you are and where you ought to be. And what else do you use it for?
So I would definitely say yes, spot checking your market is the biggest one. And I just want to like lean into that a little bit and kind of just again, because I'm getting so excited about this because we've been using this extensively. And this is, in my opinion, a highly underutilized tool. So there's a lot of really great tools out there. And don't get me wrong, maybe they're deep dives or how you're allowed to manipulate the data inside of their tools. Maybe it's a little bit more customizable than what we're seeing here in the Product Opportunity Explorer. But the way that most sellers go about defining their markets within these tools, right? So you can use a tool like Helium 10. Jungle Scout has one. Smart Scout also has really good niche definers. But what you have to do in those tools is you have to define your own market. And how most people do that, I mean, I did a whole interview with Mike Freaky from Purge, exactly how they, track market share and, go about doing this. But the way that they do it is they look at the keywords and they create groupings of keywords and say, okay, our search share on these keywords defines our market and our market share. You have to go through and define your market within any of these tool sets. What Product Opportunity Explorer is doing for you here, Amazon is defining the market for you and also telling you where you fit into the market. So I'm looking at the sort of the product view here. So I've clicked on the product. I'm looking at product metrics right here. I'm literally seeing a chart or a table right below. It says the niches that this product appears in. It gives me the top search terms for all of these niches. So again, Amazon saying this is the niche you fit in. And by the way, these are the top searches that are relevant to this particular niche. And if I wanted to dig into here further, I could look at any one of these particular search terms. I find clicking around here is really good. And then I can even look at, I'll say, okay, this is what Amazon's saying is the top search for this niche. What is the demand or the past 90-day growth of search volume for this term from Amazon first-party data found in 3 clicks? Phenomenal. And so this is how we're using it. So not only are we looking at, I say, an individual product level, which can be very helpful if we're trying to aggregate and get a better idea of the market share, we can zoom all the way down into a shopper's search level and look at things like, again, the growth of an individual search over time. Now, again, other tools slightly more customizable because here I'm looking at the growth in the past 90, 180, and some demand, and looking at a 360-day window, which is maybe a little bit farther than some people. So again, validity to other tools, we still use them extensively, but here again, I find this very intuitive and user-friendly, and also with the ability to say, okay, I need to go pull out these quick insights. The other thing that is highly beneficial to look at if you are trying to figure out what you should look at in terms of ad targeting or important targets is there is conversion rates in the Product Opportunity Explorer for an individual search term, but it's different than the conversion rates reported in the Search Query Performance Report. So here, this is called search conversion rate. This is not, again, your traditional conversion rate where you think of, okay, someone clicked and did that click lead to a purchase? That's not what this is defining here. Search conversion rate is a shopper used this search query on Amazon. Did they purchase from that search query page? Yes or no? And that is how it's defined. So you're actually going to see really, really low conversion rates here, which might confuse you because you'd be like, wait a minute, I know like conversion rates for MySpace are around 20%. And here you're telling me I have like a 2% conversion. Like, what gives? So it's search conversion rate. How this is insanely helpful is it says, what is the shopper intent for this particular search term? And this actually helped us to validate a theory that I think we've all had for a while, is that the more defined the shopper search, the more specific it is to a very like defined type of product, then the better your conversion rates should be for that one search query. So a classic example would be, say you had a search shopper search that is, like baby or, shower gift or something. Like it's undefined where we're not sure what this particular shopper is actually trying to purchase. They're kind of, it's either a browse keyword or that's like their first search. And oftentimes what happens is a shopper will go through that search page and they might click around and they might see some baby blankets or maybe, there's a cute onesie set or something. And they're kind of using this to go deeper into sort of their purchase search. And so maybe they say like, oh, okay, maybe they purchased through that search page, or maybe they go, oh, yeah, I really want to get a onesie set. And so they'll back out and they'll say, like gift onesie or something. They'll kind of go down that search path. So a search conversion rate reporting is actually going to give you insights into that search path. And what we found is that, again, the more or the less defined the shopper searches to a particular product, the lower your search conversion rate will be. And you'll actually find on some very broader terms inside of the Product Opportunity Explorer, the search conversion rate is going to be zero. And you're like, wait, zero conversion rate? My opinion is because there's only two decimal places. I think if they extrapolated out, you would, maybe get like a 0.00001 or something. So there are some people going through and purchasing through those searches. But what that shows you is that just because the search volume is high on a particular keyword does not make it a good keyword, especially if you're going to be, dumping a lot of volume into, your ads, a lot of ad spend to go after a particular search. If that search, you can't validate that it's going to lead to high purchase behavior from shoppers, it's probably best to save your money. Because with the search conversion rate, it's not saying like, hey, are they clicking around, right? They might still be clicking around, but are they purchasing? And you can use that to kind of validate potentially your launch strategy, your ranking strategies to know that, okay, I've at least done the work to say, okay, if I'm going to put a lot of my ad spend into these searches to, again, grow my market share, grow my product, grow my sales, I know I'm putting that ad spend in a place that has high shopper intent in terms of purchases.
I have a question for my listeners. Are you experiencing cash flow challenges with your Amazon business? Well, silly question. Who is not, right? So let me introduce you to Viably, a unique solution tailored for Amazon sellers and e-commerce enterprises. By connecting your Seller Central or Shopify account, you can promptly access funding along with a variety of financial tools, all for a flat fee. It's as simple as that. And for my listeners, they are offering an extra $1,500 in funding for eligible applications. Start your quick and easy application today at runviably.com/legends. And that's runviably.com/legends. Yeah, so this brings me to a couple of things. So first of all, I think that this Product Opportunity Explorer will help that is you have to define what your buy keywords are, right? So it's the buy keyword. So there is a difference between keywords that lead to a purchase versus keywords that just are for browsing. So the search conversion is your data point that will tell you which keywords are your buy keywords? And the second thing that I thought of as you were talking about this, so as it happens, just yesterday, I had a meeting with one of the Amazon ad people. We were reviewing a client, and she had this whole presentation prepared for the client. And what she was talking about was they analyzed the shopper behavior on this particular client, in terms of how long before they make the decision to purchase, pertaining to how they got to the listing in terms of the advertising method. So, what she was saying was those who came to the listing by clicking a sponsored product ad made their decision almost the same day. And then that was only a small percentage of the traffic. If you left it with that, then a great majority would go up to 90 days before they completed the purchase. So what she was saying was, look, here is your complete potential. And as yet, you are realizing a small piece of it fast enough. So how do you reduce that? And how you reduce it, she was saying that you really need to spread your advertising across sponsored display and also sponsored brand ads, where you do not necessarily drive for purchase, but put the focus on the brand and perhaps even your store. Because apparently, collectively, those things are working together, they reduce that buying cycle. And then you can get a much, much better return in a shorter period of time on your advertising dollars. So I think that listening to you, in my mind, I'm thinking, because those are also keyword based, as well as audience and store and brand and everything else. But some of these other non-buying keywords could be part of the way that you drive traffic so that you can build up your brand on Amazon in terms of the shopper's behavior. What do you think? I mean, is that something that you could use this for?
Yeah, no, I think you definitely can use it like you were talking about for, expanding your brand, doing more of a brand awareness play. Because to your point, it is helpful, the whole adage in advertising, if they run across you more than once, then they have that recognition when they get to maybe the sponsored product ad, which is, where you're seeing most buyer intent. And I would say that's something that correlates what we've seen is that sponsored products tends to have, the quickest, the most direct buyer intent with it. I think it has to do with the ad inventory as well as how they show up. They look a little bit more native, less like an ad, and are also directed specifically to a listing, which can very much make it a more like a very condensed and shorter, sharper funnel. And I would say like doing brand awareness plays is very valid, but it's helpful to know that that is your intent. So if your intent is to run, you're looking for very much purchase based, you're looking for, maybe your highest ROI, you are really dialed in and want to make sure, you have limited budget and you need to maximize the performance of that budget. If that's the type of advertising that you want to dig into more, which to be frank is most of our client base. Then you would want to go very high shopper intent. You want to go super, and you're looking at bottom of the funnel, which is like as, the quickest path to purchase that we possibly can. And that's where you're going to see the biggest ROI from your advertising spend. Again, in terms of short-term gains, high ROI advertising, very much bottom of the funnel, very much high purchase intent. The one that you're talking about is more of a broader brand awareness play, which can be very good, but that strategy is a very long-term strategy and will always have, technically a lower ROAS attached to it, which if that's not your that's not what your brand needs to focus on right now, which that is more of a business decision than it is an advertising decision. I think all of us in advertising, if we're like, no holds barred and there's no contingencies on what we're doing, we would want to run both bottom of the funnel and top of the funnel plays. The thing we have to take into account is the fact that these are businesses and these businesses need different things at different times. So that's where we really focus on when it comes to building out ad strategy is the top of the funnel awareness play. Do we have the performance? Do we have the ad budget? Do we have everything else good in the business, as far as profits, cash flow, all of those things? If we're running really tight on cash flow, profits are struggling a little bit, then adding on a brand awareness play, even though, again, it's a long-term play, helpful to build the brand, potentially is really going to significantly impact the brand for the negative in the short term. So we need to, make sure that we're tailoring whatever our ad approaches are to the intent and needs of the brand at the time.
I mean, look, these advertising teams are usually there. I mean, they obviously they know what's going on in terms of advertising itself with all the latest things and everything. But ultimately, they are there to work for Amazon and get you to spend more money on things, especially the new things, because they also need to see the results of what they are rolling out is doing. So I always approach it with caution. However, this is what I took away from her conversation, and because she was showing some results, and they call it the peer performance. And what she was saying was, if you want to build a healthy operation with your advertising, where your historical data is your real asset base here that you can run off of, she was saying that sponsored products should be about 66% of your total ads. The rest should be separated. That she even included DSP a little bit. Sponsored brand is the next. Sponsored brand and sponsored display are close to each other. And then she has a little bit of DSP in there, like it was single digits, like low single digits. So that gives you the better value, mainly because anything that you kind of grabbed through sponsored product, you can really bring it home with these much, much quicker. So I don't know. It's obviously everybody's different, and budgets always demand, the most return. So, what I want to do is, I want to get a little bit more specific on the Product Opportunity Explorer. So when you, first of all, if you log into your Product Opportunity Explorer, Amazon will show you what your niches are, right? So they pick based on your performance. So as soon as you click on the niche, depending on which one you select, or you can go find one, you are presented with multiple options. So I want to get a little bit actionable here in terms of how you make use of this data. So right at the top, you can see those big numbers, first of all, your search volume on this particular niche, and the trend that you were talking about. They show the past 180 days, average units sold, the past year, 360 days, return rate, not number of top clicked products. So, and then the average price. So those big numbers, what's the most valuable one to me is the, if you really want to be a player, you got your 31 ASINs there, right? That I'm seeing. Number one, number of top click products, it shows 31. That to me is exactly what your competition is, right? And then you can go look at those. What is your approach to using these numbers here?
So what you're talking about is if you click on the niche and you'll see the niche details, you'll see again, niche is defined as a grouping of the shopper searches. And the first tab that would be open would be products. So this is all of the products that are within this niche. And they're actually ranked based on, from my understanding, it's based on the click share. So basically, how much click share of this particular, again, niche. So this is defined as multiple searches. So if you remember the what is it, brand analytics before, so you would see each individual search and then you would see the top three clicked products for that search,
Right,
which was very helpful. But if you're not within, say, the top three, well, then you're completely falling out of that search. Now, if you go into search terms, you will see a list of the top three clicked products. So it's very much sort of similar to the, kind of original brand analytics. But why I think that this kind of aggregate niche view of all of the top click products is so helpful is one, it's actually going to show, so how Nick was saying that there's the number of top click products shown here. It actually lists, so in this case, I'm looking at the niche of baby blanket, which again, as I said, is quite broad, but it shows 86 is the number of top click products. And so if I scroll down into this products tab, it shows one of, you know, it's 1 to 25 of 86. So I can see all 86 top click products. It's going to give me things like the image, which is helpful. I can see the ASINs. I can see what brand they're in. So maybe if you want to see like, hey, is this brand dominating this niche? There is a download option for all of these grids, which we, to be frank, had looked at Product Opportunity Explorer, but found it a little cumbersome to work with because there wasn't any really good way to copy the data. Similar to how they reached released Search Query Performance Report, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then immediately everybody realized there's no good way to get this data out of this dashboard because there's no download button. And then Amazon released a download button, and you know, we're all very pleased with that update. A similar thing happened to Search Query Performance. So we would dive in, we're like, oh, this is interesting. We might take screenshots, but like, okay, I want to take all of, you know, so for example, right? I might want to say, okay, these are the top click products for this particular niche, which is highly relevant to me and I want to go after. So let me download all of these top clicked products. And these, you know, one, am I already targeting them in my advertising? But then two, if these are some of the top click products, which means they have the most traffic coming, again, aggregate of the entire niche, which is helpful. This is not only going to be looking at single search terms, it's going to say, within this entire sort of shopper search grouping, these are the products that are getting the most traffic. And so these make fabulous targets for product targeting instead of my advertising. Now I have a download button. So I can download these and then use these in my probably create a campaign around all of these. And then I can say, okay, so these are the, again, these are the ones that have the most traffic. I can also see things like launch date. You can see the niche click count, so how many clicks are they getting? Again, aggregate of all the shopper searches and the clicks through that, their click share percentage. Here's another great one. The average selling price. Now, the average selling price, it's looking at the past 360 days. So it is a longer view, but here's a great way to validate, is there anyone getting a high click share in my space that has a higher priced product? Because there's a lot of shoppers who will come into a space and maybe they're priced, you know, quite a bit above their competition, which again, we all want to make profits. So don't get me wrong. If you can sell at a high price point, it's great. But what happens when that high price point is hurting you in terms of sales volume? The Product Opportunity Explorer is probably a great way to validate that. So if you click into different niches and say, okay, again, because this is looking at groupings of shopper searches, you can say, okay, when shoppers are looking sort of, you know, with this in purchase intent, are they clicking on any products that are at a higher price point? So here I'm looking again, I'm looking at the niche baby blanket. So I can see that the top click share product by far is has an average selling price of $11.04. Again, they're looking at a 360-day average. Then I'm seeing another low price point, $9.59, $10.92. Then I see a $14. So, you know, it's kind of within that, you know, between 11, less than four, $15. But then I zoom down, you know, probably 5 or 6 points, and I see, well, there's actually two products that are selling at an average of $22.49 and an average of $23.82. That's very interesting to me. They're within the top share of product clicks, and they're doing something that is causing shoppers, one, to click, and then ideally, you know, most likely purchase. You can also see the their average bestseller ranking as well. So if I validate that against their average bestseller ranking, I can say, okay, not only are, do they have a higher price point, they have a high click share, but then they also are doing really well in terms of where they're ranking in the bestsellers. And so you can use this again to validate that those, you know, those niches contain consumers that are interested in purchasing maybe a more high value product. But then you can also go look at your competition. So I'm not looking at the cheapo $8 ones. I'm not looking at the $10 ones. I'm saying, okay, I want to go and evaluate those particular products that are selling at that high price point that are able to have that accelerated sales that I can again validate through their bestseller ranking and their click share, And then I can go see what they're doing and see if there's anything within there that I can replicate, or maybe ideally a couple things that they've missed that I can then add, to my product listing somewhere. So that can be very helpful, especially in times like this where it seems like everybody is hurting in terms of profits, and like we really want to be able to raise prices, but we're worried that that's going to hurt our sales velocity. This can be a way to sort of say, do I think I can get away with it? Or what changes can I make? What improvements can I make to, kind of still appeal to the market if my price point's higher?
Yeah. So, okay, a couple of things there. So, click share is one thing, but the purchase from that click is another. How do you factor that into the whole thought process? Because when you are looking at, so again, for our, in audio, it can be a little bit tough to follow. But if you go to Product Opportunity Explorer and just pick any niche, and ideally your ASINs, one of the niches that your ASIN belongs to, Amazon will automatically show that and just click on the niche. Right at the top, you have big numbers. They show like a dashboard kind of thing. And then right underneath, you have multiple tabs. The first tab is the products, and that shows you the top clicked products. So that big number in the dashboard that you see is number of top click products. They are listed right underneath in the product tab. And then there is a tab called search terms. If you click that, then you see all the search terms that were used that produced that performance. So what you were talking about in the products tab, you can see it's listed in the order of click share. So which listings got the most clicks? So you were talking about, and right next to it, there is the average selling price. So first of all, right at the top in the dashboard, you can see the average price across top click products. And then what I heard you say is, if your price is higher than the average and you're getting a high click share, that tells you that you can, in fact, sell a higher ticket item and still get more clicks. So my question is, what if those clicks are not yielding as much revenue?
Yes,
So
no,
how do you
that's
factor that into that?
yes. So what you can look at is there's another column further to the right. Now, to your point, I know they're getting good click share. Is all of that click share translating into sales, right? It's just because they're getting clicks doesn't mean they're selling well. So what you can look at is the average bestseller rank, or essentially BSR. So you can validate that they have a low BSR, and we can all assume, based on how we understand that BSR works, is the more you sell in that particular category, the lower your BSR is going to be. So if you can validate that they have a high click share and they have a good BSR, in that average bestseller rank, then you can infer that they are in fact making a good volume of sales.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It's fascinating, this conversation. Would you believe we've been talking an hour? It's a...
Hopefully the audience hasn't gotten bored. I apologize.
No. I mean, listen, this we can go on forever. I mean, there's a lot more questions that I have here, and we haven't even started yet on the trend. So maybe we should do a follow-up and then dig further into this. I mean, from everything you said here, right away, you can go look at the top click products and then pick out who is performing in terms of average selling price, where is their price compared to average selling price, and then where they are in terms of click share. And then look at their BSR. I have one more thing to add to this before we wrap up this part. By looking at those top click products, for God's sake, if they are getting high click share, the chances are they've got pretty good main product picture, right? Go look at their pictures, copy what they are doing, because clearly They are doing something right if they are getting top. I mean, it's one thing to have impression share, but it's another to actually to have people click it. And what gets people to click is price, rating, and picture. Picture is
Yes.
half the deal, right?
Yes, absolutely. Which, to your point of the star rating, it also gives you an average customer rating looking at those products. So you can also look at that as well, to validate, okay, so if I get a very low, customer rating, how is that going to affect me? Is anybody ranking in the top? Because what you will find is that there's some spaces, particularly electronics is a really difficult one for it. Any sort of like very technical products, you will find that there are some consumers that just have a poor experience. Anything that, to be frank, I mean, I am a shopper, so I am like this as well. I'm talking about myself here as well, but sometimes with more technical products, consumers don't always know how to use the products. So you'll often find that you get poor ratings off of things. You're like, really? I thought the instructions were very clear. So sometimes you will find that there are products that rank that maybe don't have a good, really good consumer rating. And again, that's another thing that you can validate is, do I think I have a shot here? If I have, say, a 4 stars, I mean, I'm looking at this grid right here. Average consumer rating is like 4.6, 4.9, 4.8. It's all really high. I don't think I really see anything below a 4.5 and anywhere near the top. And so that would be another thing to validate, like, do I have a shot here? Or maybe I shouldn't even think about it until my product ratings come back up.
I mean, average customer rating compared to number of ratings they have. That's another thing. So you are launching and your competition has 18,000 ratings. I mean, that's
Yes.
going to be an uphill battle. But if you don't have that kind of a situation, that also gives you an idea. Well, it's a fascinating conversation. There is a lot to do with this data. And like I said, we just looked at the first tab. So there are one, two, three, four, five, six, seven tabs.
So much to pull out of this. Yes.
So perhaps we should follow up. I actually do this with some of my guests. So what happened was we had two guests where we had two sessions back to back. One was about search query performance. So we did a deep dive. And another one was, I think it was about advertising. I forget now, but it's something that, I mean, this is definitely worth exploring. And to me, this is much, much more valuable than search query performance. So, before we wrap up this conversation, how often are you supposed to, is this data stagnant data where it's published and then it's refreshed once every so often? Or, in other words, how long is it good for once you download it? Do you know?
I'm not entirely certain of like how often it is refreshed. I don't want to say updated in the terms of like retroactively updated, which is because what you're talking about is like, is it gone back and refreshed? It is, however, updated frequently. Some data say search query performance. We're looking at what, the last, we're looking at it in weekly chunks. This in a lot of the graphs will actually give it to you in daily chunks. So for context, today is the 20th, and I'm looking at graph right now, and it's giving me day by day data all the way up to the 18th, which is only what, 2 days. So it is updated and in very incremental slices, which can be helpful again if you're trying to validate things over time, which means, I mean, you can get lost in this. So my recommendation is like go through, explore, figure out, how you can best pull out the insights that you need for your brand, and then sort of put that into a workflow. And then you can check that maybe weekly and then do a deep dive every so often, would probably be the way I would recommend getting into and using it.
Yeah, I mean trends by default, trends are not sporadic, right? It's over time. So if you pull this data, I'd say once a month, I think you are in good shape. And then as you suggest it if you create your workflow based on that, and you can just refresh the data, and you don't have to do it so often. Well, great conversation, Elizabeth. So I always do this right at the end, even though you were one of my early guests. So let's introduce you to our listeners a little bit. So tell us about yourself. And I know you live in Florida, and you like nature and walk. It's a little bit ironic because you are deep into data, as yet you like nature. So where is that interest coming from?
That's a good question. So I think it's because I'm at the computer all day. And I will clarify. Okay, I don't dislike nature, but I'm not a probably as big as like a nature heart kind of freak as that may sound. What I love about it is I like the sunshine. So I live in Florida. There's something about sitting behind a desk for 12 hours and then walking out your door and getting that nice really warm sunshine in your face and going and taking, a mile walk through the woods. That's, I think, my favorite part of where I live and how I live. So I do enjoy that. So we live on about 100 acres near the Ocala National Forest. So it's very quiet. It's very chill. I actually know it's not very quiet. It's not very chill because I have six children. So it's loud in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of space for them to be able to run and play. It's a really nice juxtaposition of, a lot of go, 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 a lot of work, work, a lot of long hour days behind the computer, and then a very relaxed and I don't know how you would say it. Like it's not like my daily life is very, it's not hyper scheduled. It's not, I like having the space to just be and do and, just kind of move through life at a relaxed pace because I think, professional life is a little bit polar opposite of that.
You have six kids and you work with data in Amazon space. So what I want to know from you is, when you go on your walks, it's peace and quiet, right? So that's usually how long before you can actually get into that relaxing mode? Because you can't just cut off, can you? Because you've got stuff.
No.
How share with us some of your methodology of shortening that, because you see, you may, okay, I'm gonna go take a walk now, but you may be walking, but you're still working, and it's still that you're not in the relaxation mode. So how do you get into that mode?
I would say I don't all the time. It depends. I've learned to figure out what I need. So, for example, there will be some days where I'm going out for a walk, and my mind's thinking on something in particular, and I'm mulling over a specific idea, and so some sort of background noise or information around that idea is helpful, and that's what I want in the moment. So I'll put on an audiobook, or I'll put on a podcast, or maybe you can listen to a YouTube video. Just put it in your back pocket as you walk, and you're sort of allowing someone else to teach you through, again, a particular topic or subject that you're interested in. That's my favorite way to consume audiobooks is what is the information that I'm trying to learn right now? And then, get an audiobook around that particular type of information. I've done it in the past where, someone says, "Oh, you should totally read this audiobook," or "You should totally do this." And I'll put it on. And I'm like, "Yeah, I should get to that. I feel like I should be doing this." And what I've learned is that if it's not centered around the problem that I'm trying to solve right now, it becomes a chore. Whereas if it's centered around, some piece of information that I want to be able to expand, my understanding of, then it becomes very helpful. However, I think we all have those days where you're sitting behind the computer. Maybe you feel like you haven't accomplished what you needed to for the day, but your mind is shot. You can't take any more pieces of information. Just somebody walking in and saying, "Hey, do you want this thing? What do you want me to do with it?" Just like, you feel like your brain just overflowed at that point, and you're like, I can't even comprehend, let alone answer basic questions at this point. Those are not the days for audiobooks. What is helpful for me in those moments is to allow myself to not think, because you're gonna have those things in the back of your mind that you're like, I feel like I should do more. I should always be on. I should be learning. Every moment of every single day needs to be learning and growing and, 1% better and, crush it and dig hard and whatever. But your mind, like, if you pile on more directed thoughts in those moments, that is when you hit peak overwhelm and burnout. And so for those ones, and you'll feel it, like if you start into a walk or you start moving your body or going in a different direction, you'll feel this want to, I should be listening to an audiobook. I should be listening to a podcast. I should be, working on this problem. And then the thought of doing that makes you feel exhausted instead of energized. That is the point you cut it off and you say, you know what? My brain needs nothing right now. And so you put away the audiobook, you allow yourself to relax, and you go take your walk, and you try and recharge the best that you can. And then maybe work a little bit more when you come back to the desk, and maybe not. Hopefully you've signed off at a good point where you can make that decision, and sometimes you can't, and you have to get back into it. But that's kind of how I work through it, I guess. Currently, maybe I'll have better tips in 6 months.
Yeah. And then there is the guilt for not doing enough, right? And if you do, I mean, I totally get this. You are overloaded. You can't take anything. Say that, you know what? That's it. I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to relax. And you relax. And then a little bit into your relaxing, then the guilt creeps in. I'm not, oh my God, I'm falling behind. And so it's juggling all these things.
What
It's
I
hard.
found helpful in those times is to, because it's gonna feel like when you're on that walk, oh, I'm not doing the thing, I'm not doing the stuff I need to do, I'm wasting so much time. Calculate the time you're actually spending. So my walk takes me 5, 10 minutes. And then ask yourself, if I put X off for 5 or 10 minutes, what is the worst thing that's gonna happen?
Yeah.
Because you're gonna feel like that. You're like, ah, oh, I gotta do this project. I gotta answer these. How long is it gonna take you? Gonna take you an hour? Is delaying that project 1 hour going to destroy you? No.
Yeah.
Okay, and that has been helpful to me, because it feels like when you're in it that it's stretched out for an infinite amount of time. It's not an infinite amount of time. It's a very finite and oftentimes much shorter period of time than we think. So if you can think of it in the context of my entire day, this little sliver of 5 to maybe max 15 minutes that allows me to recharge is not going to kill me. It's not going to hurt
Yeah.
productivity. And that
Yeah.
can give you a little bit more peace of mind sometimes.
Exactly. I mean, it's all about perspective. Well, great conversation. A little bit of venting about challenges of life, I guess. You know, it's all good. So tell us, Elizabeth, how can people reach you and share your contact information with us?
Yeah, so the best place if you're interested in getting an audit, so we work with brands that are, roughly about, high 6-figure, 7-figure level that want to get to that 8-figure level. They want to grow. They don't want to sacrifice profits, yet they're so overwhelmed with what they have to do, the team. They don't feel like they have that partner who's driving innovation that can connect the ad strategy with their business goals. And so that's where we'd come in. So the best place to contact us for that is definitely going to be the website, which is jungler.com, JUNGLR.com. There's a form. You can get in contact with me, set up a call. We'll go through business goals, and then we'll work through how we can attach, your ad strategy to those business goals. However, if you're just like, ah, I don't want to deal with an audit, I don't want to talk to you, but I want to hear what you're talking about, best place to follow me is definitely going to be on LinkedIn.
Yeah, definitely. And you are an engaged professional, and I see that you participate in conversations and things like that. So I would encourage everybody to reach out, and Elizabeth is very knowledgeable. Thank you for being here, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate being on. This was a great conversation.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll have more. So
For
thank
sure.
you. Before I go, a quick reminder to say goodbye to your cash flow problems and claim your extra $1,500 when you qualify for $25,000 or more in funding. Go to www.runviably.com/legends and start your application today. And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.